Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Susan Shand. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Apple announced 3 new iPhones and improved health features for its watches during a launch event on Wednesday. The event was held inside the Steve Jobs Theater at Apple's headquarters in Cupertino, California. One of the new phones is a larger version of the company's pricey iPhone X, which launched last fall. The new model is called iPhone XS Max. It has a screen size of 16.5 centimeters, making it Apple's biggest smartphone yet. As with the iPhone X, the XS Max has a screen that runs from edge to edge to provide more viewing space. The phone's screen also needs no backlight, so black and other colors are supposed to appear truer than on previous devices. The iPhone XS Max will cost $1,099, up from the $999 price of the iPhone X. Another new model, called iPhone XS, is smaller than the iPhone 8 Plus, but actually has a larger, 14.7 centimeters, viewable display. The company says both the XS and XS Max models are equipped with an improved version of Face ID, which first launched with the iPhone X. Face ID permits users to unlock their devices just by looking at them. The iPhone XS is priced at $999. Apple says the XS and XS Max versions include the most powerful chip found in any smartphone. In addition, the devices use a dual camera system the company says produces much improved picture quality. This system combines faster processing speeds with what Apple describes as a neural engine. With these tools working together, the camera can automatically improve things like lighting, sharpness, and depth of field, Apple says. The third newly launched device is called iPhone XR. Made of aluminum, it has an edge-to-edge LCD display measuring 15.5 centimeters. The iPhone XR comes equipped with Face ID, but only a single lens camera. It is designed with fewer features than the other models to cut costs. The iPhone XR sells for $749. The new iPhone models will be available in the coming weeks in the United States and many other parts of the world. At its launch event, Apple also announced new versions and expanded features of its Apple Watch devices. The new Apple Watch Series 4 will be a bit larger than current models, coming in 40mm and 44mm versions. Apple says this will provide a screen that is about 30% larger than the Series 3 models. The Series 4 will also be built with a stronger back made of ceramic. Some of the Apple Watch's most popular features deal with tools to help users improve their health and fitness. Several improvements were announced related to these features. For example, the Series 4 will be able to detect when someone has an irregular heartbeat and send a warning message to the user. Apple said the devices can also gather more detailed heart health information known as an electrocardiogram. The watches also have a feature that is supposed to detect when a person falls. Apple says the watch can even automatically make a 911 emergency call for help if the person does not begin moving within a minute. Apple also used the launch event to announce that its new iPhone X devices will be equipped with dual SIM card technology. This means the devices will be able to hold both a nano SIM and eSIM inside. An eSIM can be controlled virtually and does not have to be placed physically inside the phone. This dual SIM technology can permit users to use two phone lines with their device. It will also make it easier for users to change phone service carriers without having to get new SIM cards directly from company providers. Apple announced that new phones launched in China will be equipped with spaces for two physical SIM cards, since eSIM technology has not fully developed there. The technology had already been available on some of Apple's iPad and Apple Watch devices. Apple CEO Cook said the company is already working with phone carriers on how the new technology will be used. I'm Brian Lynn.
Russia is holding its biggest military exercise since the fall of the Soviet Union. The military exercise is being called Vostok 2018 and includes forces from China and Mongolia. The war games continue in Russia's Far East and Eastern Siberia through September 17th. Russia and China have held joint exercises before, but nothing of this size. Before these exercises began, Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said they would be even larger than war games held in 1981. Those games involved between 100,000 and 150,000 soldiers from the Soviet Union and its allies. Vostok 2018 reportedly will involve 300,000 soldiers, 36,000 military vehicles, 1,000 airplanes, and 80 warships. China has sent only 3,200 soldiers and 900 weapons units, but its decision to take part is unprecedented. Some observers believe it is a warning to the United States and Europe. Alexander Gabuev is with the Carnegie Moscow Center. He said it sends a signal to Washington that if the U.S. continues on its current course by pressuring Russia, it will fall even more into the firm embrace of China. Gabuev told the Associated Press that China's presence at the exercises means the two countries no longer see each other as military threats. But other observers disagree. They question both the transparency of Vostok 2018 troop estimates and the political importance of China's presence. Troop numbers for exercises like these are usually what we might call true lies, said Michael Kaufman, a Russia and Eurasia security and defense expert at the Kennan Institute. This means that if a brigade sends one battalion, then they count the whole brigade, he told VOA. Kaufman added that Russian officials usually announce different numbers after the military exercises have ended. In Vostok 2014, officials said they had 100,000 soldiers, but later changed that number to 155,000. Different ways of counting troop numbers make it hard to know how many soldiers are actually a part of the exercises. The United States and other NATO member countries say they are watching the situation. The purpose of the nearly week-long war games is clear. Top NATO officials have called Vostok 2018 an exercise in large-scale conflict. The exercise is really to test Russia's ability to fight in a large worldwide conflict, and one that may involve nuclear weapons, Kaufman told VOA. He said it also is an attempt to test the Russian military's skill at moving quickly and seeing how civilian military officials would react to a large-scale war. While much of the West worries about the risk of conflict across Eastern Europe, the Russians appear to be most worried about China and the Far East. Kaufman notes the Far East is different from other parts of Russia because it is so far from infrastructure and large population centers. He added that Russia's military there is almost designed to fight on its own, almost like a separate military, which is why it has so many ground force formations. Although Russia and China have increased military-to-military contact in recent years, no one really thinks the two sides have formed a formal military alliance. Russia has no chance of a formal military alliance with China, and not because Russia doesn't want it, said Alexander Goltz, a Moscow-based military expert. China has refused any military alliances or guarantees, he said, adding that the alliance for Vostok 2018 is limited, and China set those limits. Jeffrey Edmonds is a former Russia director for the U.S. National Security Council. He described Vostok 2018 as part of Russia's continuing efforts to modernize its forces. The actual exercise itself is standard Russian military activity, Edmonds said. He said that the high number of troops may be an attempt to go against the belief in a threat from the West. I'm Susan Shand.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
Freedom is on the march.
I speak not only for my candidacy, I speak for a new American century.
America's best days are ahead of us.
Given a choice, the American people will stand where this president walked.
Every 4 years, American political parties nominate their candidates for president and vice president. In the summer of 2004, Republican Party delegates chose George W. Bush and Dick Cheney for a second 4 years in office. During President Bush's first term, Islamic extremists attacked the United States. Almost 3,000 people died in the September 11, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center in New York City and the Pentagon across the Potomac from Washington, D.C. President Bush declared a war on terror and led the nation into wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. After the terrorist attacks, President Bush enjoyed record popularity. Public opinion studies showed that almost 90% of the American public approved of the way he was doing his job. But the president's public approval rating decreased over time. One research group found that his average approval rating for 2004 had fallen to just 50%. Before a presidential election, the main parties use primary elections and caucuses to choose delegates to a nominating meeting or convention. The person winning the most delegates usually gets the party's presidential nomination. In 2003, 10 people were seeking to become the Democratic candidate for president. Among them was John Kerry, a senator from the state of Massachusetts. Another was Howard Dean, a doctor and former governor of Vermont. There was John Edwards, a lawyer and first-term senator from North Carolina. Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut also was seeking the nomination. In 2000, Senator Lieberman had been the Democratic candidate for vice president. Another senator and former senator were also seeking the nomination. So were two members of the House of Representatives, a former general, and a civil rights activist. Former Vice President Al Gore was not among the candidates. He had lost the disputed election of 2000 to George W. Bush. Mr. Gore announced he would not be a candidate in 2004.
I want my country back.
Some political observers thought Howard Dean would win the Democratic nomination. The former governor actively opposed the war in Iraq. He won praise for the way he raised money for his election campaign. Supporters gave him millions of dollars in small gifts through the internet. Then came the Iowa caucuses, the first step in the nominating process in January of 2004. John Kerry won with 38% of the state's delegates. John Edwards finished second with 32%. Howard Dean was third with just 18%. Senator Kerry continued to win delegates and gain support in other states. Several candidates, including former Governor Dean, withdrew from the campaign. In early March, Senator Edwards also withdrew. He did so after Senator Kerry won victories in 9 state caucuses and primary elections that were held on the same day. The Massachusetts senator named John Edwards as his choice for vice president. Senator Kerry officially received the Democratic Party nomination for president at the party's convention in Boston.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty. We have it in our power to change the world, but only if we're true to our ideals. And that starts by telling the truth to the American people. As president, that is my first pledge to you tonight. As president, I will restore trust and credibility to the White House.
The combination of John Kerry and John Edwards balanced the Democratic ticket in several ways. Senator Kerry was considered a liberal. He came from the Northeast. Senator Edwards was considered more moderate. He came from the South. Kerry was Roman Catholic. Edwards was Protestant. John Kerry was born in Colorado in 1943. Like George W. Bush, he studied and graduated from Yale University. He then joined the United States Navy. He was wounded in combat and won honors for his service in the Vietnam War. He criticized the war after leaving the military. John Kerry graduated from the Boston College Law School in 1976. He became a lawyer for the state government in Massachusetts. Then he served 2 years as lieutenant governor of the state. He was first elected to the Senate in 1984. His wife, Teresa Hines Kerry, led a family foundation that gives money to important causes. Senator Kerry and President Bush debated 3 times on national television. They campaigned hard across the country. Foreign policy was the major issue during the campaign. Mr. Bush centered his campaign on national security. He said he was the best candidate to keep America safe from terrorists. He said Americans could trust him to be strong against terrorism. He presented himself as a decisive leader. He said Senator Kerry had changed positions on issues and would be unsure in the face of danger. In 2002, the senator had voted to give President Bush the power to use force against Iraq. But Mr. Kerry now criticized the way the Iraqi conflict was being fought. By autumn of 2004, more than 1,000 Americans had died in Iraq since the war started in March 2003. Thousands of Iraqi civilians also had been killed. Senator Kerry talked about the war in Iraq.
You got to be able to look in the eyes of families and say to those parents, I tried to do everything in my power to prevent the loss of your son and daughter. I don't believe the United States did that, and we pushed our allies aside.
Senator Kerry said his goal for the United States was stronger at home, respected in the world.
He believed that the United States had lost respect from many of its allies because of President Bush's foreign policy in Iraq. The president defended American actions in Iraq. He said the war was needed to fight terrorism. He also expressed satisfaction that because of the war effort, Iraqis were free of a cruel dictator. In the United States, economic growth had slowed before George W. Bush became president. The economy got worse after the terrorist attacks in 2001. Mr. Kerry said the economy should be expanding at a faster rate. And he denounced the growth of the national debt under Bush's leadership. The president praised his administration's actions in difficult economic times.
6 months prior to my arrival, the stock market started to go down, and it was one of the largest declines in our history. And then we had a recession, and we got attacked, which cost us 1 million jobs. But we acted. I led the Congress. We passed tax relief. And now this economy's growing. We had 1.9 million new jobs over the last 13 months.
President Bush suggested a plan for younger workers to place some of their pay in private retirement accounts. Senator Kerry opposed this idea. The president opposed most operations to end unwanted pregnancies. The senator supported a woman's right to have an abortion. His position disagreed with that of the Roman Catholic Church. Early in the campaign, opponents of John Kerry's candidacy formed a group called Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Its leader was a military veteran who, like Mr. Kerry, fought in the Vietnam War. The group argued that the senator was unfit to serve as president because of comments he made about his military service and his activism in the anti-Vietnam War movement.
John Kerry gave the enemy for free what I and many of my comrades in North Vietnam, in the prison camps, took torture to avoid saying.
The group even questioned the combat medals awarded to Mr. Kerry. Other Vietnam veterans, including several who had served with Kerry, denounced the charges against him as completely false. Some people believe the accusations and his campaign's delay in answering them had an important effect on the results of the election. Americans voted on November 2, 2004. As in the election of 2000, there were questions about voting problems during and after the election. The vote was especially close in the state of Ohio. Kerry's supporters reported problems with voting machines. They also said many people were illegally prevented from voting. The state had enough electoral votes to decide the winner of the presidential election. But the day after the voting, Senator Kerry decided not to question President Bush's win in Ohio. The final results showed that Mr. Bush won about 51% of the popular vote nationwide. Mr. Kerry won about 48%. George W. Bush would serve 4 more years as President of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.